Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the launch of one of the world's largest atmospheric carbon removal projects.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. A Kingston area minerals mine is putting southeastern Ontario on the map in the fight against climate change. Canadian wollastonite, located in Seelies Bay, has signed a three-year agreement with UK-based company Undo Carbon to supply nearly 500,000 tons of rock for one of the largest carbon removal projects in the world. I spoke with Canadian wollastonite president Bob Vassily about the science, the scale, and what this means for Kingston and beyond. Wollastonite is a mineral not many people have heard of, but according to Vassily, it could play a huge role in tackling carbon emissions, while also helping Ontario's farmers.
We supply wollastonite, which is a primary mineral, and most people don't know what it is, but it's a calcium silicate. We supply it into a number of industrial applications, into steel manufacturing, into some green cements. We've been working a lot as a soil amendment, but recently we've done a fair bit of research, which is very compelling now, as a soil amendment for farms, which has the main benefit of capturing atmospheric carbon and bringing it down and locking it away. But it also has agronomical value to the farmer. So it encourages farmers to participate in this carbon removal cycle, which is important to everybody.
The cycle is an accelerated version of what the Earth has already done for billions of years, enhanced rock weathering.
The process is a natural process. The Earth has been doing this for billions of years. It's always taking place. And so the process of rain picking up carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, reacting with silicate rocks, and those silicate rocks permanently locking that carbon away, is how the Earth has regulated itself since it cooled, originally cooled. The process here, we're accelerating it. It's called enhanced rock weathering because we're crushing those silicate rocks down to a fairly small particle size, and that increases the reactive surface area. And then we're putting it into field conditions, which again really promote the breakdown and the weathering of these materials. So instead of a process that takes thousands of years, we're quite literally accelerating it to taking 1, 2, and 3 years for this weathering process. It's relatively new in that the real emphasis of how important the need is to capture carbon that's already in the atmosphere and bring it back out really has developed. There's all kinds of technical solutions for it. This really started to take off. We started working in 2015 on it with the University of Guelph. It really, really started for us to take off in 2020 with a number of publications with some of our other university partners, Yale University being maybe one of the biggest ones. And it's catching on because it's a real practical, simple solution. It involves farmers. It involves large swaths of land. It's sustainable in that it's helping the crops also weather, survive biotic, abiotic stresses a lot better, which is what, climate change is doing to farms. So the crops are managing the stress better because of the silicon that's releasing. It's employing, farmers and farmland, which otherwise wouldn't be involved. And it's also reducing the amount of other inputs, like chemical inputs and things like that, into these farmlands. So it's just a natural win. It's far less costly than technical solutions. So there are some other large projects, billion-dollar projects to capture carbon that removes CO2 directly from the air and pumps it into, concentrates it and pumps it into rock formations deep under the earth. There's some ocean methods, but this is by far the simplest, most cost-effective, with the greatest all-around good for society and for, you know, for the planet.
Canadian Wollastonite has been working with universities since 2015 to study the process, but in recent years, it's caught the attention of international partners. Vasily explains how Undo Carbon got involved and how this new project will be scaling up their carbon removal operations.
We first started working with Undo in early 2023, and they had reached out to us with some, and we had reached out to them on some publications and some work we were doing with University of Guelph and Yale University and so on carbon removal. They were very interested. They were working with the mineral called basalt mainly, which is very prevalent. We demonstrated that the wollastonite actually, it's almost an order of magnitude, 10 times faster in its weathering and its reactivity. And since they were trying to develop some geochemical models to prove and to demonstrate the actual carbon sequestration that's occurring, that was very attractive to them. So we started off with a pilot project of about, I think, 5,000 tons of material. It went really well. They put it into some farm field applications as well as some trial plots. They were getting strong signals. They were getting good signals in terms of weathering and rates, which they weren't getting, you know, it was taking years to get in other minerals. So they wanted to scale that up. We agreed. So we scaled it up in 2024, and we spread a total of, I think, 35,000 tons of material on farm fields. That was a real success, both with them and their science team, but also with a number of companies that were sponsoring them to help develop the science, the enhanced rock weathering science. This contract is a real fairly significant extension. This contract is for 450,000 tons over a 3-year period. So it's, as you can sort of see, you know, 535, 450, it's a scaling. And it's really important because this is going to demonstrate for them and also for the world, because this would be, we believe this is the second largest demonstration of its kind for permanent carbon capture in the world. And it happens to be happening here in Kingston and in Eastern Ontario. But this is going to demonstrate the scalability of the science. And once this is completed, one of Undo's plans is then to start incorporating other mineral sources, other rock types like basalts and olivines and so on, into their models, and then going around and essentially get operations like us involved with carbon removal on a global scale in every country in the world. So they pitched that in a competition, an XPRIZE competition, which was a global $100 million prize competition. And they came in fourth in the world. I think if I recall, the original was 3,200 teams, universities, companies from around the world. So this humble project in Eastern Ontario is now getting some world recognition. And this particular offtake is really important. I think it's going to really set the pace for large-scale carbon removal going forward.
For farmers, wollastonite is provided free of charge and the mineral improves soil quality. This project will allow the program to add an additional 2,000 farms to the program.
We're providing the wollastonite at no cost to the farmer. That's being subsidized through the program and through the main purchasers who are trying to advance the science. So that's Microsoft and Google and Stripe and some of these other, you know, very large companies. The farmer's receiving the wollastonite at no cost. They're spreading, we're covering the cost of spreading or physically spreading it for them. And there's all kinds of agronomical benefits that the wollastonite's bringing to the crops that they're seeing right away. The farmers just simply continue the farming operations as they normally would. So normally farmers would bring in lime and put lime on fields in order to manage the pH so that they, you know, for their crops and for their fertilizers, by using elastinite. First of all, putting lime on farmlands, particularly in our area, gives off CO2. So that removes their emissions. And now they're capturing, you know, more than 50 weight percent of CO2 through this process. So it's really surprisingly simple. It's allowing them to decrease their inputs. So they don't have to, for instance, buy lime. And so there's cost to the lime and cost to spreading. So it's directly saving the farmer, which is symbiotic, because without the farmer's land, we wouldn't be able to do this. So it has to be a win-win for both the farmer and you know, the large corporations that are sponsoring this. And so that's essentially the model and how we see it rolling forward going into the future.
The city of Kingston was the first municipality to step in, subsidizing hauling costs for farmers. And Vasily says it's already sparking interest in other municipalities.
So Kingston is subsidizing haulage rates for farmers, because that's the only cost to the farmer. So they're helping the farmer integrate elastinite into their operations. It's the first program of its type that we think of in Canada, like a municipal contribution to, you know, a carbon removal at this scale, like a private carbon removal. It's significant because it's drawing adoption, a lot of adoption from the Kingston farmers. But what it's really doing is it started the conversations now with other municipalities. So we actually have, you know, Ottawa region coming down to talk about the exact same program. We have Association of Municipalities in Eastern Ontario starting to talk about this as a way for them to promote and meet their own sort of carbon objectives, carbon removal or carbon sequestration targets.
Vasily shared some of the key objectives over the next 3 years.
So certainly achieving the objectives of spreading 450,000 tons, a farandu demonstrating the measured objectives of capturing, you know, plus 200,000 tons of atmospheric carbon permanently. And so if I can give you an equivalent of that, if you were to think of trees, like planting trees, which is a, you know, people think of that in terms of carbon removal. That's the equivalent of us planting 6 million trees in the next 3 years. So it's a huge amount. The big difference, and I don't like to use trees too often, because the tree will capture carbon for the life of the tree. And then when it dies, the carbon is re-released. So this would be like planting 6 million trees of carbon capture, but the tree never dies. It lives forever. And so this is essentially what's taking place with the type of carbon capture that the farmers are participating in.
The global scientific community is also taking notice. Last spring, Undo was named one of four global winners of the $100 million XPRIZE carbon removal competition for its work in Eastern Ontario. Vasily says this project could become a blueprint worldwide.
After this trial, or basically this project, I think Undo will have the data they need to be able to model other mineral sources, which otherwise, like, it might take them 10 years normally. They'll get those geochemical models to complete it in the next 2 to 3. And then they'll be able to accurately measure carbon removal through silicate or enhanced rock weathering. And I know their goal is to then, you know, find thousands of companies like mine, and get them involved so that it becomes a truly scalable global solution.
Once again, that was Canadian Wollastonite President Bob Vasily speaking about a landmark carbon removal initiative incoming for southeastern Ontario. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque Mayor John Beddoe's plan to clamp down on out-of-province vehicles.
Thank you, Jesse. Gananoque Mayor John Beddoe's has formally updated his budget planning directive to include a proposal that would allow the town to clamp the tires of out-of-province vehicles, including Quebec-plated cars that receive parking tickets. The measure laid out in Directive 2025-0 2003 and published last week on the town's website would amend Gananoque's parking bylaw to create a new class of fine covering the full cost of clamping and unclamping vehicles. Beddoes argues the move is necessary because Ontario and Quebec lack a reciprocal agreement on unpaid tickets, leaving the town unable to enforce penalties against many visitors. He has described clamping as a way of incentivizing compliance and expanding enforceability. The proposal has already drawn criticism from Councillor David Osmond, who warned on social media that the mayor is prioritizing parking crackdowns while omitting mounting legal costs, including integrity commissioner investigations. Beddoes pushed back, calling Osmond's comments a dramatization of a single subparagraph in a much larger budget guidance document. The new directive, which replaces the mayor's earlier decision 2025-002, outlines dozens of instructions for staffers as they prepare Gananoque's 2026 and 2027 operating and capital budgets. Among them, increases to marina fees, possible expansion of boat slips, higher ice rental fees at the Lou Jeffries Arena, and curb cutouts to make all mid-block accessible parking spaces compliant with provincial accessibility standards. Under Ontario's Strong Mayor Powers Building Homes Act 2022, the mayor can propose the budget while council can amend or reject it with a two-thirds majority. Gananoque's council has 7 members, including the mayor. Public consultations on the 2026 draft budget are expected this fall, giving residents a chance to weigh in before council makes final decisions. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a story from the LJR reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstell, about safety concerns related to Napanee Via Rail station's waiting room.
Thank you, Dinah. The Council of the Town of Greater Napanee is grappling with safety concerns at the Via Rail station after a recent incident involving staff and an unhoused individual. At its regular meeting on September 9th, Council received a report on operations at the Via Rail station waiting room and related safety concerns. Staff asked for permission to begin discussions with Via Rail about potential alternatives to the current system for serving train passengers. Currently, the station's new automated access system unlocks the waiting room an hour before scheduled train stops and keeps it open for 45 minutes after departure. The idea was to improve passenger access, but town staff say it has also created challenges. Chris Brown, the town director of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, explained that while the system works as intended for passengers, it has also drawn, quote, an increased presence of unhoused individuals using the train station for matters unrelated to its intended purpose. That, he said, has created safety concerns for both passengers and staff. On September 4th, one of Brown's staff members performing routine cleaning duties was verbally assaulted by an unhoused individual inside the waiting room. Since the incident, staff no longer attend the station alone, reducing cleaning frequency. The issue comes as the town continues to invest in the property. Napanee holds a 5-year lease with Via Rail, renewed in September 2023, covering the east half of the building, which includes the waiting room. The town has recently installed a new intrusion alarm, surveillance cameras, and automated doors. Renovations have repaired earlier break-in damage, although window replacement and stonework are still to come. Chief Administrative Officer Matthew Grant noted that the situation reflects a larger issue. The CAO recommended reaching out to other municipalities for advice, noting that this suggestion was, quote, worth pursuing. Council voted to receive the report and directed staff to begin discussions with Via Rail on alternative options for the waiting room. Mayor Terry Richardson closed the meeting by thanking staff for addressing the issue.
And thank you to Michelle Dory Forstell for that story. Now over to the LJAI reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with an update on the dispute between Greater Napanee and Lennox and Addington County over the town's encampment protocol map.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
All sides have backed down and agreed to work together after the town of Greater Napanee was warned about potential legal action from the county. Lennox and Abington originally requested that the town cease distributing its encampment protocol map that identified public property, including county lands. At their meeting this week, Greater Napanee Council confirmed a letter they received September 9th from the county states that Lennox and Abington does not intend to pursue any further legal remedy to the disputes that existed. The letter also noted that the county would pass its own bylaw regarding the matter at hand. CAO of Greater Napanee, Matthew Grant, explains the timeline of events.
I'm pleased to say that we're now at a place where I kind of wish we had started, but we did receive correspondence from the County of Lennox and Addington. It is their intention to pursue their own bylaw. We did send a letter to the County of Lennox and Addington following our last meeting. We offered to assist them in their bylaw. I'm happy to share that we've already made that offer to the chief administrative officer of the county, as well as the head administrative head of Pelles. And we sent a note to the County of Lennox and Addington as they are identified by the Ministry of Municipal Affairs as the service manager accountable for service delivery. And we also sent a note to Pelles, and the mayor sent one to the Pelles chair as the operational service provider.
Grant explains the latest recommendation he made to council, which they approved at their meeting.
I'm recommending that we offer use of our facilities in the community, and that council authorize staff to waive any fees that we might charge. So that when they engage in consultation, as we engage in consultation, that they can do so with whatever facilities at our disposal that they feel will fit their plan.
Grant details how staff are moving forward.
Council and staff look forward to putting this unfortunate incident behind us. And, you know, I know that, you know, staff are very much looking forward to proceeding forward with our partners. With mutual respect and mutual support. With that in mind, we are pleased to assist with any upcoming consultations, bylaw development, or activities with the summit. Any of the ongoing efforts of the, you know, provincially funded and mandated organizations responsible for housing and homelessness.
Mayor Terry Richardson notes the importance of working together while trying to help unhoused individuals and families.
We've got to move on from this. We have to work together to try and resolve a multifaceted problem that exists in every municipality in this country and probably in this continent. So if we don't, we're going to continue to spin our wheels, and the people that we're supposed to be representing are not going to be represented.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about a proposed residential and commercial development in Cobourg.
Residents of the town of Cobourg are largely giving the thumbs down to a proposed 9-story residential and commercial development in the downtown core. The Balder Corporation, 410 Planning and Design, and Des Capital are proposing 196 housing units with commercial space and 212 parking spots at 202 Second Street. At a public hearing Wednesday afternoon, the developers presented their 9-story building, stating the height would be in line with the middle of the bell tower at Victoria Hall, essentially across the street. The building would overlook Lake Ontario and Cobourg Marina, but be hidden behind the historic wall of King Street. Former mayors John Henderson and Gil Brockenier were among 23 people asking to speak, and many other written submissions. Both stated this would go against the official community plan and the goals of the town. Brockenier highlighted that Cobourg does not have any structures higher than 4 stories, keeping with the historic height of older buildings in town.
There are nothing above 4 stories in the main central area, as directed by the official plan. But here we are today with a development proposal that is an affront to main central Cobourg in general and to Victoria Hall. In particular, the approval of 9- and 7-story condos would degrade the significance of Victoria Hall, which I previously stated as the most important building in Cobourg, but in fact, it is the most important building in Northumberland County.
The developers are seeking an amendment to the official community plan and a bylaw amendment in order to construct. The property in question is being used for municipal parking, but if the project were to proceed, it would feature commercial use on the first floor with residential units above and parking on the first 4 floors. Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland is in favor of development at 202 2nd Street, stating this is long overdue, but he adds he cannot support this project at this stage.
That I do not support this project in its current form. Now, while I do not speak for this council in those words, I would suggest that possibly the majority, certainly, if not every member on this council, does not support it in some way or another.
Cleveland warned the crowd gathered in the public gallery that this meeting was for public comment only, and that a decision by council was not going to be made following this meeting. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Thursday, September 25th. Periods of rain throughout the day, 91% chance of precipitation, daytime high of 21 degrees. Friday, September 26th, daytime high of 22 with a 55% chance of rain, dropping down to 13 degrees overnight. Saturday, September 27th, beautiful sunny day, light breeze in the morning, mix of sun and clouds, daytime high of 22, perfect weather for the Queens' home football game against the York Lions at Richardson Stadium. Sunday, September 28th, nicest day of the week so far, 21 with lots of beautiful sunshine, dropping down to 13 overnight. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, September 29th, daytime high of 22, mostly cloudy with a very small 1% chance of precipitation.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Looking for a ride? Download the Modern City Taxi app to your mobile device to get to your destination quickly and safely while supporting a proudly Canadian local business and keeping your money in the community. Download the app now and get the extra benefits like free advance bookings, ability to add your credit card and pay on the go, enjoying the freedom from price surging during high demand times, and for the month of September, you can get $2 off app calls. You can also call for a cab at 613-546-2222 any time of the day or night for comfortable and speedy transportation. Serving Kingston since 1939, Modern Taxi proudly supports local radio and the Queen's community. It is your number one service for fast local transportation. Learn more at moderncitytaxi.ca.
CFRC 101.9 FM is pleased to present an Airwave YGK matinee featuring live performances by Birdbone Theatre, Foster Shea and Sudak, and the Oscar Evans Group. Come for an eclectic musical adventure featuring traditional Slavic sounds, folk pop, and jazz ensemble works created by local artists right here in Kingston. Join us at the Broom Factory September 28th from 1:30 to 4 p.m. for three great back-to-back performances by these wonderful local artists. Folks can come enjoy food and drink for sale in the Broom Factory's licensed cafe. Tickets are available now for $15 in advance via CFRC.ca or $20 at the door. The CFRC concert is made possible through the support of the City of Kingston, Kingston Arts Council, the Kingston Music Office, the Broom Factory, and our friends at Kingston Soundworks. Visit The Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians with disabilities, whether it's through positive portrayal, reflection, and accessible media. AMI believes everyone should be included, and that includes you. AMI is inclusion. Experience AMI at amiplus.ca.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus community radio station, broadcasting to you since 1922.
Welcome to another episode of Plugged in My Ears. I'm your host, Adam, and today I'm with Kyle and Adam. No Sam today, as Sam is preoccupied and doesn't care about the podcast as much as we all do. But we do have a special guest, Adam Fernandez. Adam, how are you doing? Where are you calling from? Where, like, give us some backstory. Tell us about yourself.
I'm doing great. Thank you very much, Adam. Sorry, this might get confusing with the the two Adams going at the same time, but that's okay. I'm also in Montreal right now. I'm just in my room. I was studying a bit right now. I'm still at school. And then I was like, you know what? Screw it. I got to hop back on the pod. I feel like I haven't been on yet actually before, but I might make regular appearances now because it's been a while since I've been broadcasting. But I started 2 or 3 years ago and I stopped now, but I want to get back into it. So
yeah, Adam had a show back in at McMaster in Hamilton, and it rivaled Plugged in My Ears. It was as good, if not better. So, I mean, we're really lucky to have him with us today. And Kyle, where are you calling in from? I can see your camera on here. It's I know the listeners can't see it, but it looks quite pristine.
I'm sitting on the beach in the Pineries, or not quite on the beach, but I'm at a campsite by a campfire right now. Just calling in, always keeping up to date on the sports. Still got a bit of reception where I am, so.
You know, the grind does not stop just because you're on vacation. We're always looking into the newest sports news just for you, the listeners. We love you so much, especially Sam, but Sam definitely loves you a little less because he's not here today. But yeah, so we're going to get into it. I mean, I want to talk about Ivan Demidov and the Montreal Canadiens because this was the first kind of hockey that we've gotten to see all summer. We got to see some of these rookie showcase games. And he looked good. He had a goal and an assist in the first game with the Jets. He didn't play in the second game. But, I mean, he just looks outstanding with the puck. I haven't seen a player in Montreal play, like, have that good hands, like, since I've been starting to watch the Montreal Canadiens. I know, Adam, you brought that up, that you kind of also saw some of those highlights. What'd you think of Demidov in his first action at the rookie showcase this year?
He was absolutely stellar. Like, that's kind of the only way to put it. I think every time he touched the puck, it seemed as though he had that, like, that X factor, I don't know, like the you don't know what's going to happen factor of, like, kind of star players would argue. Like, to be fair, he was playing against only prospects and not actually, you know, larger NHL guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think, like, I'm not going to say compare him to this at all, but I think it's the speed and the hands combined make it such that he's like a player like Hudson or like McDavid or someone else, right? Like, or Hughes. Like, he's like a modern, very, very dynamic NHL player where, like, as soon as he touches the puck, he can make something happen. And he typically does. Although he's not, like, as disciplined or maybe in the best positioning that he should be. I mean, it's only his, like, first kind of real NHL game ever, right? Or, I guess, minus the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. But he's just so quick. And he's aggressive, too, I think, is one thing that is, like, really, really good to see for a guy in that position. Like, he doesn't think about whoever he's playing against. He just thinks about putting the puck in the net kind of thing, right? So I think that's a really big point too, is like, he didn't seem fazed by anybody at all. He's not, like, nervous or timid or anything. And yeah, I was really impressed.
No, I completely agree. And I think that's, like, something that, I mean, I saw out of Juraj Slafkovský. He's taken a couple of years to get going in Montreal. And mm-hmm. when he first came into the league, he was kind of shying away. He hasn't started to use his body, but Demidov comes like straight from the KHL. Like, he's been playing against grown men for a while. And I mean, he looks like confident out there. Kyle, what'd you think about, I don't know if you caught any of the clips, what'd you think of Demidov in the preseason so far?
I mean, if you're going off the numbers, like Kirill Kaprizov, I don't know if you just saw the contract he's trying to negotiate right now. Huge. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking $100 million like plus deal. And Kaprizov had worse stats than Demidov in the K. So that if that is indicative of what Demidov's gonna become, that's crazy. But no, I've liked what I've seen so far. I mean, he's got the full package. Speed, kind of, he's got a good shot in just about everything, right? I mean, he's looked unbelievable. I think he's gonna be a huge player. Hopefully Montreal locks him down for a couple of years once they're given the opportunity.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about this year, and it kind of leads me into the next topic about a lot of TSN analysts and sports analysts have said that almost Demidov's a shoe-in for the Calder this year. Like, they don't really see too much competition, and now I personally think that's getting a little ahead of themselves, but is he kind of the clear favorite right now? I know, like, it's not even, like, can't really, it's hard to tell before the season starts, but I think he's got to be primed and probably one of the most hyped up prospects coming into this season. But is there anyone else that maybe could rival Ivan Demidov this year, or is he kind of just like, give him the trophy now? Is it that kind of situation?
I'm saying give him the trophy now.
Yeah.
I'm fully calling, like, full stop. Like, I guess I'm just thinking back to like other major prospects we've seen that perform this well. Like, Bedard is a good example, I guess, also of guys who we've seen who come in right away and just immediately electrified like the ice as soon as they got on. Mm-hmm. And look how that turned out, right? Immediate Calder trophy. I guess he did have some competition as well, but I think I'm still giving it to him right away. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, especially with the way that, especially I would say with the setting around him. Like, I think that St. Louis is going to use him so well and going to give him so much room to grow. And it's also in the interest of the Canadians to have him be heavily part of the play, right? They want to grow him into the team with Hudson and with Slavkovsky and Suzuki and, you know, the young lineup there. So I think he'll get a lot of time, at least on the second line, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Maybe second power play unit, maybe even first. He could probably get some time there. So I think he'll have a good opportunity too.
Yeah, he's definitely set up nice. He's got a lot of things going for him when it comes to like lines and ice time, which a lot of rookies mm-hmm. don't have when they come in. I think that also means that Montreal's kind of weaker when it comes to their top two lines. But I mean, I think that it's still going to work out nice for him. It's a nice situation. One of the players that is kind of expected to rival him, not rival, but kind of challenge for the Calder, is Ryan Leonard over in Washington. We got to see a little bit of him at the end of the year last year, and he also had an effect in the playoffs. Obviously very different player, but I mean, definitely someone that could still get in there. That he has a really good mix of skill and played really well in college, so I think he's one to watch as well. But Kyle, is there anyone else on your list, or do you think Demidov's a shoe-in?
I think a lot of people in the draft class kind of collectively agreed that it was a weaker draft class, like, as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I mean, based on that, I'd say he's definitely at an advantage in terms of like the other players he's competing against. But I think the biggest one is that he played in the K. Like, playing college hockey is not the same as playing in the KHL. Like, college hockey is pretty low contact, whereas the KHL is like arguably higher contact than the NHL. So if you can perform with like speed and skills with that much, like with full contact, basically, then it'll translate directly to NHL. I mean, and KHL is also, like, if you look at power rankings for leagues, like, it's basically directly below the NHL. And it's like, you know, 75% of the way there, I think. I think that's the ranking they use on it. And every other league is not even close.
Yeah.
So if you're performing well in the K, like, it's directly translatable, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's so rare for rookies to even get good playing time in the KHL before coming over. I mean, I think back to prospects like Artemi Panarin or Kirill Kaprizov, who did play in the KHL for a couple of years, and they played when they were about 3 or 4 years older than Demidov. So mm-hmm. I think that it's definitely a good look for him. He's coming in pretty hyped up. I'm excited to see how it goes. I kind of want to talk a little bit about Kirill Kaprizov. So he just rejected a contract that would have made him the highest paid NHL player of all time with the Minnesota Wild. 8 years, $128 million. So that's $16 million a year. And he said no to that, to play for the Minnesota Wild. Kyle, you're shaking your head there. What do you think about this this rejection from Kirill Kaprizov? And is this essentially him saying that he does not want to play in Minnesota after this year?
I think you're right. I think that's basically what he's indicating. I mean, like, him rejecting that offer is kind of insane, though. It's just ridiculous. Like, no one's paying him that much somewhere else. He may think so, but it's not happening. Like, he might get $12 million somewhere else, but 16 is not happening anywhere but Minnesota. Like, Minnesota's, they know that their, like, franchise is pretty contingent on, like, holding on to him. But, yeah, it's just not, that kind of money is not coming elsewhere, so... I mean, maybe he just wants to win. That's fair enough. If that's what he's trying to go for, he just wants to move somewhere he's going to win. But, I mean, the real question is, where does he go?
Yeah.
That'd be a crazy move. I don't know. That's a league-wide impact where he goes.
No, Adam, yeah. Adam, I'll let you answer that one. Where do you think Kaprizov would go if he does switch it up?
Like, I'm assuming he's turning this down because, like, Kyle's saying he wants to go to contender, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just got to sort through like possible contenders that have the potential to really move things around a lot to make that salary cap up.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's not looking great. Like, I don't know if there's like middle of the pack teams that are looking to make a move maybe that weren't exactly there last year. I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah. I'm just thinking like most of the top teams are not willing to cut down what they already have. Like, you could joke that the Leafs, you know, are going to do some major restructuring, but they can't. They already signed, you know, Willie. They trade away Marner. Even Vegas also is locked into what they're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Vancouver, probably not, though. I don't know. I think it's hard to say where he would go other than Minnesota, right?
Like, I know, because, what I mean, Minnesota's not a terrible team either. At least, we watched them last year. They are, you can get better than Minnesota, but can you get better with a team... and also get paid what you're worth. Like, if I'm being completely honest, I don't think Kaprizov is worth $16 million a year. I think that was an outrageous contract. Like, Minnesota was just like, at least we're offering him. If he leaves, the fans aren't going to be upset at us. They'll be upset at him. Like, we gave him everything we could offer. But I don't know any other team that can just bring on another $16 million a year player right now. It just got harder with all the Sam and I were talking last week with the collective bargaining agreements and long-term IR. You don't have that flexibility as much heading into the playoffs. You still have to be salary cap compliant. So the salary cap, sure, it's growing, but it's still strict, and there's not really any too many ways to get around it as much as there used to be. Yep. So, I mean, I'm really interested to see where he goes. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, Adam. I have no idea where I could imagine him going other than Minnesota, like where he's going to get paid and be happy. Because, I mean, I'm trying to think of everything that's wrong with Minnesota. And, like, it's not a bad city. Like, sure, the temperature is pretty cold, but, I mean, Kaprizov's from Russia. He should be used to that, right?
It's also, like, a good hockey town, too. Like, it's a good place if you want to actually have real fans and, you know, like, dedicated fans, essentially, right? All that stuff.
Yeah, no, I think this is a major slap in the face to Minnesota fans. And, I mean, like, that's ballsy going into the season in a couple of weeks. And you just outright turned down the team. Like, that doesn't really show that your heart's in it. So maybe we see him get traded sometime throughout the year. And then a team, maybe he just works on, like, either a bridge deal, like a couple one- or two-year contract. Or he just plays out the season with another team and then... enters free agency, but I guarantee he's not getting $16 million a year when it comes down to where he's going to sign. And I mean, I feel like this is a great opportunity to head over to the NBA because we were talking about contracts, and Kyle, you brought up Kawhi Leonard and that contract catastrophe that's going on right now in Los Angeles. Just kind of for the listeners, give us a quick recap of what's going on with Kawhi right now.
Well, I know more about what happened in Toronto than the current situation, but at least in Toronto, what happened is his agency basically said that, his agency asked for $10 million, like, additional in sponsorships that were no show. So basically $10 million just, like, under the table additionally.
Mm-hmm.
Plus a couple other, like, kind of wild demands that were a bit less significant, but the big one was that he asked for partial ownership of the Maple Leafs, which is like, I don't know if that was like a, I mean, I guess it wasn't a joke, but like, that's a multi-billion dollar like team. So partial ownership is like, there's like, I don't know if he genuinely thought he's worth that much. Like he's worth like a team paying him like $200 million or something for 1 year. Like that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah. I don't even know. Anyways, that, yeah, that, like, so some pretty crazy deal asking, and it's not too surprising he's having some other controversies now after that kind of negotiating under the table payments, let's just say.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and this all came to light because he's being investigated for the no-show endorsements that he allegedly agreed to with the Los Angeles Clippers and their sponsorships. So it looks like Toronto dodged a bullet and had a little more ethics than Steve Ballmer and the LA Clippers. But yeah, so right now they're under investigation. It's like a $28 million deal that was essentially a no-show. So just a phony. He didn't even show up for it, and he still gets the $28 million. I know professional sports has a lot of greed, but this seems extravagant to me. We've talked a lot about contracts on this show. Like I feel like that's like a main point of the show at this point, is talking about how much money these players make. But Kawhi Leonard, just for some background, right now he's on a 3-year $150 million contract with the Los Angeles Clippers, and that is guaranteed. That is a guaranteed contract. So Kawhi Leonard, pretty known for sitting out many games in the regular season for load management, and is getting paid probably top 10 player money. And then on top of that, he's doing no show endorsements, and now it's kind of come to bite him in the butt. And I mean, I don't feel bad for the guy at all. I hope this stuff is not true, and that it was just all a huge misunderstanding, because I do like Kawhi Leonard. I like Kawhi Leonard as a person. I like him as a player. He won a championship for the Toronto Raptors. He's, in my opinion, one of the greatest Raptors of all time, even based off of that 1 year. But this would be huge for ruining his reputation around the league. And, I mean, it might not even be all his fault. I know a lot of people are saying it's his uncle, it's his management team that's doing all of this. But, I mean, still, he's the name that's on the contract. It's kind of hard to look past that, and I've seen some people say that this might hold like almost a season suspension, like an 82-game suspension, which, I mean, is insane, because I don't remember a controversy this big that was contract-related. I've never seen this in really any kind of sports. So, yeah, Adam, any thoughts on this debacle of a contract?
It's just such a mess. I mean, and one thing people are pointing to a lot is the fact that his uncle's his agent. I mean, for better or worse, like, not that you have to be, I guess he's probably certified in some way, I think. I'm not exactly sure. Honestly, I'll say about the whole Kawhi Leonard thing, and I think I've said this after after he left Toronto, and I think I still hold the same opinion. And I think it's viewing it in this context makes it a bit, not to say easier to understand, but like softens the blow of what he decides to do in general. I think, first of all, like, no one can really understand the guy. I think that's established right off the bat. But one thing, like, when he left Toronto, for example, is it was clear that he just wanted to go back home to LA and just, like, take it easy and play basketball. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't really have a clear motivation in terms of someone who really wanted to win a championship, because he would have stayed with the same team that you won before.
Yeah.
So I think this whole contract thing that happened, too, like, I think if you look at it through that lens of, like, he doesn't necessarily care about like winning a championship or being like an all-star and the best player and like getting tons of publicity. Like, he doesn't care at all.
Yeah.
So I just think his actions, generally speaking, aren't rational compared to other players. That doesn't make it any weirder. Like, I think the whole thing's still a fiasco. But I guess my main point is just, I mean, it's Kawhi Leonard. Like, what do we expect? I guess is part of my point. Like, if there's any player this would have happened with, I'm like, yeah, like Kawhi makes sense. You know what I mean? But yeah.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think it's I really hope, again, like I said, I hope it's not true and it's all big misunderstanding, but it's not looking too good for the guy. I mean, they seem to have plenty of proof, and the NBA's hired their own law firm to go in and investigate this. So I think it's going to be very telling about what kind of person and player Kawhi Leonard is. But moving over to the NFL, we saw some crazy stories from week two. I don't know if you guys are paying too much attention to the games, but Joe Burrow, essentially quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, got turf toe, so that requires surgery, and he's out 3 months. So that kind of derails, I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals season. They had a good backup. Jake Browning came in and threw a couple touchdowns, and the Bengals were able to still win, and they're 2-0 to start the season, but a lot of people think that that's going to harm them. And then another interesting story, Kansas City Chiefs have started the season 0-2, and Patrick Mahomes is on his first three-game losing streak of his career. So going back to the Super Bowl last year, he's now lost three games in a row, and the Chiefs seem to be kind of in trouble. But yeah, I don't know. We'll turn this over to you guys. Joe Burrow on his injury. Any thoughts for the Bengals? What they should do with that? I know there's like some people reaching out to free agent quarterbacks and seeing out there. And then with the Chiefs too, is 0-2 the end of the Chiefs dynasty, or are they going to turn that back around?
I mean, I'll say with the Chiefs, like, you kind of, you know, I guess they just have to up the paychecks to the refs and maybe something will still happen. But current seems like the payment plan's a little low for this season. But, you know, I honestly, it's not sustainable to win every season. Like, you just can't do that. Like, eventually you lose players and stuff just happens. Like, it's just hard to keep that consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So, honestly, I'm partially happy that they're not doing that well. Like, I hope they don't do that well, really. It's nice to see other teams like take that slot. Like, I'd rather just not have them get all the airtime.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And we don't have our official Taylor Swift analyst, Sam Schoenfeld, with us today. But what do you think? Do you think the engagement to Travis Kelce has played any role in the Chiefs' downfall?
Jersey sales are up. I don't know about anything else. It's a distraction, I guess.
It's a complete distraction. Kyle's running on the money. I mean, that's literally all it was, and that's why the NFL's been milking it out so much. It's just the whole Taylor thing, right? Like,
yeah,
nonstop, all the time.
Do you guys think she's going to call it off if the Chiefs don't get winning soon, or is this...
I doubt it. I think she learned football rules pretty recently.
Fair enough.
She won't know the difference if they win or lose.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, I don't think it's a factor. Yeah. Maybe it's the factor in how extravagant the wedding is because Travis snuck in his bonus, but we'll see.
He might be using his bonus on the wedding, so we'll see. Man, yeah. I can't wait for the wedding pictures. I'm so eager. I'm so eager. Adam, any comments on either the Bengals or the Chiefs? Anything to add there?
I mean, I feel bad for the Bengals once again. Like, I think they've come so close so many times, or just like recently at least, they've had a lot of success. But having this Joe Burrow thing happen really, really sucks, obviously.
Yeah.
Chiefs-wise, I mean, I think it's the classic thing. We'll see what the NFL keeps on doing this year with respect to rule calling, not to throw too much shade. But, you know, like, in-game rule calling is pretty important, especially when now, honestly, I think they'll actually milk it up more because they got engaged, obviously, right? So I feel like the stakes... I mean, I'm not saying in terms of, like, rules, like, actual, like, strict who should win which game, but the stakes in terms of money are so much higher for the NFL. Like, they just, like, tripled their bet, and now it's, like, the amount of Chiefs coverage you've seen before, every time Taylor's at a game now, it's going to be, like, a national event, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to... I think the funny thing will actually be if Trump goes to a Chiefs game when Taylor's there, too, at the same time, and then it'll be, like... Who's fighting for the camera time? You know what I mean? Like, it'll be an interesting dichotomy there.
And there's also a history there. I mean, like Trump put a bunch of weird tweets about Taylor Swift at like 3 a.m. one night or something. Like,
tweets about everyone at 3 a.m. But yeah.
Oh yeah, but she was a target somehow. I think you know what could happen? Trade. Travis Kelce gets traded to a contender.
Okay. All right. Ooh, I like it. Hot take. I mean,
NFL makes it happen. He still gets to win again.
Yeah, you think? Just so they can keep Taylor Swift at the Super Bowl?
In the limelight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
They want her at every Super Bowl.
I mean, I think it brings a huge crowd. So, I mean, I don't blame them for wanting to have Taylor Swift at every Super Bowl. But this kind of leads into an interesting thing. Tom Brady coming out of retirement for the third time to play some flag football. Now, I think that this is in preparation for the Olympics because football is in the Olympics now. flag football is in the Olympics. And I think it's a kind of more of like a, I don't know, kind of like a gag. Seems like a person or like a just a TV stunt kind of thing to get some people in like ready for it. But he's going to play in Saudi Arabia. That is where they're hosting this. With Rob Gronkowski, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, CeeDee Lamb, Sauce Gardner, Myles Garrett are some of the other major names. But yeah, so I guess it's a round robin tournament and two teams advance to the championship game, eight players per team, and there's three teams. This is the first that I've heard of this since I didn't even know this was happening until Tom Brady said he's coming out of retirement to play. It's happening in March. I mean, what do you guys think about this? Is this just a money grab by the NFL? Apparently, I don't even know if it's related to the NFL, but it says Fanatics is hosting it. Oh, no, it is partly with the NFL. But, I mean, first off, what do you think about football being in the Olympics? And is this just a stunt by Tom Brady, or do you think he'll actually be pretty good?
I mean, football in the Olympics is going to be a complete joke, not going to lie, because no one else plays it other than Canada. Like, there's no one that plays the sport. So it's just going to be an absolute, like, slam dunk for the U.S. Like,
I was going to say, it's totally just an NFL marketing thing. Like, the NFL is just laughing right now because I feel like they've been trying so hard, I mean, successfully in some cases, to market the game globally.
Yeah.
Like, they've been pushing the global angle so much. And I think this is just more in that line of, like, how much money can we milk out of? Because I think they've by far saturated the U.S. market, right? Like, they control the U.S. market completely, even North American, I would say. Yep. The next thing is, like, they've said for a while, is like, how do we get, you know, all these other countries in Europe and stuff on board? And this is part of it, I feel like. And not that the Saudis are going to be that good at football. I think that's purely just a money thing. Maybe in Saudi Arabia, maybe they're huge football fans. You never know. Maybe they, like, they got fields in every park or whatever. They got, like, goalposts everywhere, you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping that if they did do this, it would be in like London or something where they've actually had like a presence for a while. I find it being in Dubai a little odd, but I mean, I don't know if I'll watch it, but I mean, I'm sure we're going to see about it on social media. But this reminds me of kind of like the Pro Bowl. So the Pro Bowl is like the all-star game for the NFL, and they did two-hand touch football. They've moved away from actually tackling and stuff during the all-star game to just two-hand touch. And that's fine because we understand people don't want to get hurt and everything, but I don't know. What do you guys think about the difference between the flag football and the two-hand touch? Do you think that it will still be exciting to watch? Because, I mean, I was thinking about this, like, even for the Olympics, like Kyle said, I feel like it's going to be such a wash with the states, especially if they send NFL players. Does the flag kind of make it maybe a little more challenging for these players that are used to rap tackling? And like, I feel like the players aren't really used to grabbing flags, so I guess that's kind of what my point is there.
I think it could spice things up. I mean, I guess the other thing that would be interesting is like some countries have major rugby teams. Like, I don't know, I guess like South Africa's got some pretty good rugby. Like, I guess like they could put up a decent fight with some good rugby players out there. I think you're right though, like their only chance is like the rules are like kind of strange and like borderline confusing to like NFL players, and like that somehow like trips them up a bit. But even then, I don't think, I guess, like, wait, how many players are they playing though? Like, what are the team sizes?
I believe it's 5v5. Now let me just fact check that. Because I don't.
That's an interesting breakdown
wrong.
There. I guess is that
that's
the
a bit more of a toss up then.
I haven't really seen too much flag football really before, so I don't really know if what the breakdown there any of us is. But
so
honestly, that's just like you honestly might even like recruit like a sprinter. Like, not even like a football player, like just get like a 100-meter sprinter as your like fifth player.
I mean that doesn't surprise me. Like, I feel like they can definitely specialize more, and maybe like not even some of the NFL players are like best suited for this. I know that was a lot of things. They're like, there's apparently a professional flag football league in the States that I'd never heard of, but the one quarterback was saying that he deserves to play in it over like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. But I mean, I don't know. I think we're going to have to wait and see what this looks like. From what I'm seeing, it's 5v5, but there is a 7v7 option as well. But yeah, no, I mean, we will be covering it when it comes down to the flag football. We'll let you know how Tom Brady's doing. But that is everything that we have for today. We are out of time. Thank you, Adam and Kyle, for joining me. And we will see you next week again, Thursday at 5:30, plugged in my ears on CFRC 101.9. See ya.
Helen Tuff's Child Outreach Program provides opportunities for Queen students to engage with children in the Kingston community from varied backgrounds. Queen students are paired with a buddy between the ages of 5 and 12 to practice literacy skills and participate in engaging group activities for 2 hours a week, either Monday or Wednesday evenings. Connect with children in a one-on-one setting, spend time with like-minded students, and gain volunteer experience. We follow the Queen's academic schedule, which means no program during reading week and exam season. If you'd like to become a mentor and have a positive impact on a child's life, apply today via HT.